Hello, this is Alger Podcast, episode number 20. You can find more information about coaching services, leadership growth courses, and other podcasts on my website, which is algercoaching.com. That's A-L-G-E-R, algercoaching.com. Today, I have a very special guest with me, Justin Keeler. He and his wife own and operate Keeler's Candies Bakery in Chico, California. And I've known Justin for about 15 years. I actually hired him when he was only about 19 years old. So Justin, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Brian. You know, it sure seems like the last 15 years have flown by, and I can still remember that interview when I was 19 years old sitting there in your office. You know, I was just a young man hungry to work. And now today I'm still grateful as ever to be sitting here with you once again. It's great to see you, man. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Hey, likewise, man. It's great having you here. I remember how young you were, you know, coming in, because that, you know, it was almost like, can this kid handle a job, you know, a big boy job, you know?
Yeah.
But I remember you were working a full-time job, I think, at a grocery store.
Yep.
And you were doing landscaping on the side. And I thought, man, if you could do two jobs and landscape, you got some hustle. So, you came in and did a great job. So it's good. You know, I'm really, really glad that our paths crossed, you know. So
absolutely.
And definitely great to have you here. So, you know, and I know you pretty well. I've known you for so long, even though, like, we live an hour and a half away, but we stay in touch off and on throughout the years. But the audience doesn't know you. So let's get to know you a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about your life, you know, kids, marriage, all that kind of good stuff?
Yeah. So I am married, you know, the most amazing woman that I know, my wife, Jalissa, she's my rock. We have four beautiful daughters. Yes, you heard that correct. All daughters.
Four girls. So you can't go to the bathroom is what you're saying.
No. And we're actually contemplating bringing our oldest upstairs right next to us. And so it might be longer times out of the bathroom. So we'll see how that one goes. But yeah, they're 1 year old, an 8 year old, 11, and 14. So, you know, I really could not imagine life without them. Everything I need each day to drive me is right here close to me. And as a family, you know, we like to get out in the outdoors as much as we can, camping, hiking.
Yeah.
You know, taking the dog to the river. Fishing, that's pretty much our jam. And now...
And the girls like all that stuff?
Oh, yeah. You know, that's how I was raised, kind of out in the backwoods, you know, down south in Louisiana. And, like, that's just what I know, what I grew up. And
yeah.
They love the outdoors. So that's been outstanding. And now they're pretty much all getting into athletics. You know, they're growing up or dancing. You know, even including our youngest, she's only one, but she tears up the living room floor in her dancing shoes, you know,
so learning early.
Oh yeah. You know, it's awesome to see. And, like I said, truly my happiness now in life nowadays is just watching our kids grow, seeing them kind of discover who they want to be in life.
Yeah. You know, the older I get, the more I realize that's what success is.
Right.
Like just those moments with your kids, man. I mean, just your family, just being there with the people you care about and the people that care about you.
Absolutely. You know, in regards to myself, outside of work, I love to sing and play, write country music on the guitar. Like I mentioned earlier, fishing. I really just enjoy, you know, really just keeping my brain busy.
Yeah. We'll have to get together and do some playing.
Yeah. No, that would be awesome, man. I would enjoy that. Sometimes my wife says I need to kind of let my brain rest. I'm always constantly doing this or doing that. So to my wife, I think I'm getting better at that, slowly but better. most of all, I just love to hang out with my kids, like I said, and be a dad. I'd love to be someone to my kids to whom they can go to and learn, you know, have fun with.
Yeah.
Even as a young kid, I remember being a father was just something I always wanted to be. I don't know if a lot of young boys think of that when they're, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, but I don't know. I always wanted to have a big family when I grew up.
Yeah.
And so
that's one of the most important leadership jobs that you will ever have is being a father or a mother, being a parent.
But, every day I feel blessed, you know, every day is a blessing.
Yeah. That's awesome. Now, Justin, you have one of the most interesting stories that anybody I know personally. Really some wild stuff that has gone on in your life. Several just gigantic events. And so to sort of like let this unfold, right. let's start off with your love of baseball. Like, you played baseball for a long time, right?
Oh yeah. So I played baseball from the age of, gosh, far back as I can remember, 4 or 5 years old, all the way into my 20s, simply put, I love baseball. Yeah. To me, that was life, when I was a young kid, I realized I just loved to throw, and I threw pretty hard. I mean, it started out, my earliest memory, just throwing rocks. It started there.
I think that's how every baseball player starts, right? It's just chucking rocks in the water or something like that.
Yeah, like having a target, I wanted to hit something. I wanted to challenge myself, and I would literally do it for hours all the time. I remember, one time in Mississippi at my grandpa's house, it was even wintertime, and everyone else is inside, and I'm outside, and I'm hitting trees with rocks, and I hear a voice yell out to me, Justin, stop throwing all my gravel, and I still need my driveway. And I would pick a tree in the distance and hit it, and then pretty soon move on to another tree. I would just keep going at it,
Yeah.
That led me, into T-ball and then baseball for years to come. I mean, what a game, man.
Yeah, and I'm with you, man. I love baseball. One of my favorite times of the year is postseason baseball, man. Everybody in my household knows that when postseason baseball, especially, is on, that's where I'm at, watching the whatever game is on, whether it's my teams or it doesn't matter to me it does matter to me who's playing, but I will watch it. I will watch postseason baseball no matter who's in it, whether I'm rooting for them or against them.
Yeah, the competition is awesome. It's great to see.
Yeah, it's a fun game. Now, you started to become a really good pitcher, and I remember this very well. You were, if I remember right, you were playing in a men's rec league, and you were prepping, getting ready to try out for the Chico Outlaws, which if you don't know baseball, the Chico Outlaws, I believe, are a single A team, so that's a few steps below the major leagues, but these are not, I mean, these are good players.
Oh, yeah.
This is a very competitive league. So as you're prepping for this, you're in the rec league, and there's a game in particular that some pretty wild stuff happened. So tell us the story of that day.
Yeah. So, I had played baseball all the way through high school, which I thought I had established myself as what I consider to be a pretty good darn pitcher, I was a 3-year starter for varsity, throwing probably mid-80s my senior year. And then after that, I took a little bit of time off, mainly to establish a good job. I was on my own late in my senior year. I had to continue to pay bills, rent, those type of things.
Yeah.
As a younger person, even after graduated high school, I still loved the game more than ever, but at that current situation and time, that point in time, I couldn't take or didn't want to take some local junior college playing opportunities to pitch. I had a girlfriend at the time, things that run through young men's brains. I don't know. I did want to stay close to my grandparents.
women change things.
I'm like, baseball or my girlfriend that I'm at the time going to be with forever. And, that didn't quite go as what I thought, but
didn't work out how you thought that was.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but, I got to work in pest control, earning a pretty good living for a young guy. Kind of like you were saying earlier, I was working two jobs before I started in pest control. And I'm like, man, now I can have one gig and make more than I was before. Like, I'm totally down for that.
Yeah, we shared that in common. There was a number of times I worked several jobs.
Yep.
And when I got to a spot where I could work one job, I felt like I won the lottery.
Yeah, yeah, that was a great day. I still remember that feeling. Along that way, I still to that day, like, I still never stopped throwing though. Like, I still wanted to be a pitcher. I wanted to give it a go. Like, I wanted to be in the big leagues. I never stopped working out. I never stopped improving my arm strength. I mean, I was eating well, putting on weight, by the age of 21, maybe 2.5 years later, I was in great shape. I threw harder. I was bigger. I was dominating the Chico Rec League that I was in. You know, my fastball was clipping 90 now.
Yeah.
Off-speed pitches dialed in. I mean, I had a nasty pitch one of my high school coaches taught me, which was like a knuckle curve. You know, I even threw a knuckle, a changeup slider. I mean, I was just ready for the next step and chasing that dream of being a major league pitcher.
So you spent a lot of time and effort on this.
Oh, yeah. I was, if you look in the dictionary of obsessed with something, that I was obsessed.
That's what it takes. I mean, honestly, if you're not going to be successful at anything you do unless you're somewhat obsessed with it anyway.
Exactly.
Right? Because if you know, Malcolm Gladwell talks about that in, I think, Tipping Point. Where he talks about, you know, to become an expert at any given thing, whatever it is, you got to put your 10,000 hours in.
Oh, yeah.
And you're not going to be an expert until you're, you know, in that realm. And so, yeah, I mean, that makes sense. You know, you got to have that discipline to stick with something over and over and over again.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely 100% correct. But yeah, like you were saying, I remember the date. So, one game in that men's rec league, I remember the date like it was yesterday, June 9th, 2009. I got the signal from the catcher. You know, I'm on the mound. Count is 0-2. You know, the third strike was coming in the way of a high inside fastball. I was bringing the heat. I mean, I was
bringing that 90 miles an hour.
I was fired up, just like every other game when I took the mound. You know, I came set. I checked the runner at first. I pushed off the mound. I reached back to bring the heat, and as soon as I started throwing, and my arm's coming forward to pitch at max torque, my humerus, my right arm just it snapped, it fractured, it just spiral fractured right there.
Wow!
So I mean, it's like all I remember was this amazing. I mean, I can't describe it. It was the loudest snap I've ever heard, like a broom handle breaking.
So you're hearing this crunch?
Yes. Yeah.
And what's going through your mind? Like, what are you thinking?
I mean,
that'd be terrifying.
Yeah. The ball, I remember the ball fell straight down to my right foot. It rolled off the mound. I mean, I was immediately in shock. My adrenaline's pumping. I didn't have any pain for quite a while. I grabbed my limp arm and I pulled it back into my chest. I knew something was very wrong.
Yeah.
My entire team rushed the mound. I sat down on the mound. I mean, all I can say is that I remember saying over and over and over out loud to my teammates and thinking to myself, like, I think my tricep fell off. Like, I know if that sounds weird to your audience, but like, that's the feeling
of
a spiral fracture of your right humerus, is that nothing is now connected really in that area. And I just kept thinking, Coach, I think my tricep fell off.
Wow.
And so my grandfather was still alive at the time, him and my grandmother were at the game, and luckily they took me to the hospital right away in their car, and I mean, off the way we went.
Now I remember this happening, and I don't remember if it was the day it happened or the next day or whatever, but I remember this. When this happened, the first thing I thought, of course, was cancer. I mean, somebody's bone breaks like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost always, I mean, at least in my experience, I mean, obviously not a doctor or whatever, but that was the first thing I thought is, oh my gosh, does he have cancer? You know, I mean, like, oh my goodness.
That's what I started thinking. You know, I'm starting to think, well, you know, what's going on? I went and researched similar injuries. You know, it's not a very common injury. I did find one before, like in the major leagues, where a guy had done that. I'm not completely sure of his name, but it was like in the late 80s or something. He ended up having, I think, cancer, like bone cancer or something leading to it. But for me, it was just kind of a freak incident.
Yeah. So what's okay? So you've got time right now. You don't know what's happening. You're going to the hospital. There's a period of time, I don't know how much time it is, that they're not just concerned about your arm, I'm assuming, they're concerned about other. Did they test you for cancer right away? Like, what did the doctors say when you got there? Like, what's their first thoughts?
So, first of all, like, I had to, when we first got to the hospital, I had to convince them that it wasn't my, like, rotator cuff.
Uh-huh.
So, I told them, I was like, no,
So right away they're telling you
they're like
your arm, it's your shoulder.
Yeah, I'm like, no, I if I move my arm, like I am
But basically, your arm is broken in half somewhere between your shoulder and your elbow.
Correct.
I mean, that's, you know, you call them whatever medical terms you want. The thing snapped in half somewhere between your elbow and your shoulder. Like, that's not good.
Yeah. No, I didn't know even in that time. I just know, I was like, it's not my shoulder. My shoulder's fine. You know, they were going to put me in an arm sling. And I'm like, at this point, I'm starting to feel some pain. It's been like a half hour. And when they attempted to put me in an arm sling, I felt some movement. And then I almost passed out. And they saw my move. So basically, there was movement folding where it shouldn't be folding, and that's when they immediately kind of took me in for a cast.
So then they said, oh, maybe it's not the shoulder. So they brought you in for a cast.
Yeah, they took me in to cast it. They put my arm into what is called like an arm hanging cast, and what it did was it tried to naturally align the bone without surgery.
Okay.
So they x-rayed me, they did that, we kind of went over the spiel of what to expect and what was going to happen after that. And so my entire right arm was encapsulated in a cast. And
okay,
it only took a few days before I could tell that something, this wasn't going
to
work.
Yeah. So you're day one, you go to the hospital, they take some x-rays. You're up in, what city were you in, Paradise?
I went to Chico. I was living in Paradise, but yeah.
But you were at the Chico hospital. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're at a hospital in Chico. They do an x-ray, they put a cast on you. And then 2 days later.
Yeah, it was extremely painful. I just knew that,
what's going through your mind in these 2 days? Like, your arm snapped in half. Snapped in half. Yeah. You got a cast on.
Yeah.
You're 20. How old are you at this point?
I am 21.
21 years old. What are you thinking?
Thinking my life's over.
Yeah.
My dreams, you know?
Wow.
But, my whole world pretty much came to an end. I just remember when that injury happened, even though I wanted to come back in that time, my mind, I felt like it was over, you know, everything.
Yeah.
So
isn't that wild how life can just change?
It was instantly.
In one moment. Like,
it went from,
like, literally before that, you know, 0-2 count.
Yeah.
You're thinking, I'm going to play Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
After that one pitch, everything changed.
And I remember in that instance, this wasn't no elbow or I knew I'm. It's funny you say that. Within seconds, I just knew I'm done. I just told I'm done. I'm done.
Wow.
I'm done. I knew that was it. You know. But
so then you go, okay, so your dream you feel like is over. Did they ever talk to you about maybe having cancer? Did they check you? Was there any kind of concern about that, or were they pretty sure?
They did. They ran tests. They ran blood work. They ran all of that. They didn't find any.
How long did it take to get the results from that?
A few days, if I remember correctly.
Okay, so you got a couple, 2-3 days where your mind's probably wandering a little bit.
Oh yeah, because I think, you know, what do I got? Like, you know, I don't know the technical terms, but like brittle bone disease, or I'm like, what's, you know, I don't know. I just have never thought that a human could throw a fastball and break their own arm.
You know? Yeah.
It was.
I had heard about it before. I want to say there was a major league pitcher. I don't remember the story, but I have a vague memory of a major league pitcher that's arm broke like that, and it was cancer, which is what made me think. You know.
Oh yeah.
When this happened to you, so you got a couple of days. You're thinking not only maybe you're not going to be able to play major league baseball, but things could be a lot worse than that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. There's so much going through my mind. For a few days, it was pretty exhausting thinking about.
Yeah,
you know, my world got turned upside down right then and there.
So then you got results from the doctor that it was or wasn't cancer.
Yeah, yeah, it wasn't cancer. You know,
thank God.
Thank God. Yeah, I chalked it up. I started to think maybe, you know, did I accidentally fall or bump into something previous? Did I like maybe do something to disturb my arm before, you know,
set it up
game,
somehow.
Like set it up somehow. I couldn't, I still to this day, I could not think of anything other than, it's just a freak incident.
Yeah. You never think, I mean, we always take for granted that our arm always works. So it's always going to work.
Oh yeah.
Like and, that happened is crazy.
And, you know, and the only thing is that, what I could probably say to baseball players, younger players nowadays that I probably didn't do a good enough job of was, maybe proper rest, certain things to where you really need to take care of your body. You know, I mean, when I was in school, I could chuck a ball. I mean, I could straddle home plate, not take a step, and just chuck it over the fence, and people thought it was cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I could just wing it. I mean, so.
So you maybe pushed yourself a little
bit. I probably pushed myself. I had a high like pain tolerance. I could pitch, you know, we had an allotment of how much we could throw, but you know, I just, you know, maybe didn't take enough time off. You know, in the off season, I always played traveling ball. I probably put my arm through as much as it probably could at that point.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So you get through the scary, I might have cancer thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're 2 days into having this cast on a literal broken in half arm.
Right.
And then what?
So I knew something was off. You know, like I said, it was painful. The right side of my body, and with any normal break, I think you're going to get some like bruising and blackness and this and that. But my right side and my arm was swelling so bad, and whatever, I mean, God knows what, like pouring in almost from my arm to my right side. Like I almost had like my right side of my like abdomen and things were bigger than my left. So, you know, I went for a second opinion, and little did I know if I didn't, you know, I needed to get emergency surgery, but you know, I could have lost my arm to find out. Like that was a possibility of having.
So you went and got a second opinion
right away. Yep.
Okay. So the first doctor put you in a cast, said, you know, do this, you'll be fine. It'll heal. Which seems crazy. I'm, you know, not a physician, but that seems crazy to me that you would break your bone in half and a cast would be the right solution for that. But
yeah, it was weird. Like when they were even explaining it to me at the hospital, just the way the cast hung from your arm, the position it came from your shoulder, it was supposed to keep your arm and like the gravity of it in a position to where over, you know, I think they said like 4, 5, 6, 7 days, like your bone that has broken the big parts, they're going to start to kind of lay back in line. But
okay,
I went to get an MRI and an X-ray, and they could tell right away that was not happening.
So we're at the second doctor.
The second doctor.
Second doctor says, "Let's do an MRI."
Yep.
Right away, they say this ain't right.
No. Yeah. They're like, we need to go in and fix this. You know. So that's what they did.
You go in to surgery same day.
It's that same day. I stayed at the hospital. They prepped me, and I was out. I remember. I'll tell you this quick story. I remember laying on the table. It's cold. It's like a metal table.
Yeah.
And I right before I closed my eyes, I don't know why. But
why they got to have metal tables?
I know. It's cold, man. I'm just like, I remember leaning back, and I'm like, just, they're like, all right, you'll start to go under now. I'm like, do a good job. You know, and I'm out.
So those were your last words before surgery.
Do a good job. So.
All right. It's a good thing you said that.
Yeah. So.
So you go into surgery.
Yep. Yeah, I go into surgery. That was performed. You know, from the complications from the break and everything else, my radial nerve at the same time that's in your arm, which controls all of your extending motions, you know, if you want to open your hand up, that was damaged. So I immediately after surgery, I remember waking up and like it was just numb, you know, it was numb, my hand from the block they put in you for to do the surgery.
So you wake up from surgery and you feel like, what's the numb feel like? Is it tingling? Like what's the...
Yeah, it's not really even tingling, you know, almost from my shoulder down to my hand, just numb. And then it slowly starts to wake up shoulder down, you know, down to about my elbow. And then the top of your forearm where that radial nerve runs, pretty much to the top of your hand. It was just numb. It wouldn't open up my hand. It was just kind of pretty much at a standstill.
Your hand was, your arm was, like what was going on there?
Yeah. So at that point they were telling me, you know, after about 24 hours or so that the block that they put in your, I'm not sure, like in your spine to kind of just, relieve the pain or like for surgery, like that'll wear off and you'll be able to feel your hand, you know?
Okay.
To this day, I don't remember if...
So your hand's numb at this point.
Yeah.
You're not feeling it, and you're not able to move it.
Not able to feel it or move it. And that didn't really come back for quite a while, you know. I remember weeks turned into months, and I ended up having to get like shock therapy, strength therapy.
So hang on, let's talk about this a little
bit.
Sure. Because I remember this.
Yeah.
Your arm didn't work.
No, it didn't work.
Like you broke your arm in half. You go in to have surgery. You come out of surgery and your arm stopped working. Like it was, could you move your shoulder?
I can move my shoulder. I can move everything except the ability to open my hand.
Okay. So you could move your shoulder. You could move your elbow.
Yeah.
So you could lift. So you had mobility up to that point. And from the elbow down, you had no movement?
Basically the ability to open my hand.
Okay.
I could move my elbow. I could squeeze. But if you don't have the ability to open your hand, I mean, I couldn't squeeze a half a pound, like my grip strength. So I didn't know what that meant at the time.
So you could open your fingers?
Not at all.
You could not open your fingers?
No movement.
But you could close them?
It was as if my hand was already closed and I could kind of move it inwards.
Okay. Like, so you had a tiny bit of movement.
Yeah.
So how did this affect your, how did this affect your life?
So
what changed?
Well, immediately I start to use my left hand, you know, for everything, you know.
So you're left-handed at this point.
I'm thinking, okay, yeah, I got to get good at all everything with my left hand. Eating, you know, I won't go into too many details, but, you know, it was a chore. You know, I kind of almost started to accept the fact that.
Well, I remember you were in pest control.
Yeah.
And at that time, you know, they were using a hose.
Yeah.
That you had to unroll and wind back up, and you needed your right hand and your left hand to wind that hose back up, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Could you do that?
Probably not very good. I mean, not at least without this, they had this contraption on my hand for a while, you know, throughout the therapy and everything, but it was, if you've ever seen the movie, like Edward Scissorhands, that's what it kind of reminded me of. It was as if my hand was, they placed it in this plastic cast that opened my hand up. So like from my palm.
Okay.
And then rubber bands would hold my fingers up on this contraption that stuck up about a foot above my hand. Okay. Right. And so if I wanted to close my hand on something, it would open it back up for me.
Got it. So they're basically the way you're doing some hand motions here, the way that they got it is your hand open, like you're about to give somebody a high five. So it just holds it.
It holds it open.
Hold it open. Then you can close it, and then it just opens it back up for
you.
Yeah,
so it was kind of...
How'd that work out?
I was constantly bumping into things. I mean, I don't know. At the time, it was a very big contraption. It was, it wasn't convenient. It was helpful. I'm not one to be like, nah, I'm not going to use that, you know? It wasn't convenient. It was tough. I don't know. I'm not a very self-conscious person, but I'll tell you, like walking around with that thing, people ask, man, what happened to you? And after a while, I got pretty good at telling stories about what happened to me.
And you get it.
They never believed the real one. So I'm like, I was hanging my arm out of a window driving down the road and hit a telephone pole. And I get, you know. So
you're having some fun with it.
Yeah, I had to, because.
You got a really good sense of humor, you know, and that's one thing it seemed like. For the most part, you kept, at least from the outside looking in, it seemed like you kept your sense of humor through that.
Yeah, I was trying to make the best of it. You know, I was trying to make the best of the situation. I got pretty good at a lot of things with my left hand, bowling, and you know, I was always a good bowler. But that was quite the time.
Yeah. So you're learning everything left-handed.
Yep.
And life has changed, and what are the doctors telling you? Like, I mean, is this
right?
Are they, is this possible that it could be healed? Is it something you do that you just have to live with? I mean, is it like, what are you thinking? What are they telling you?
So I went through probably at least 9 months of therapy where they would try to shock my radial nerve.
Okay, so 9 months your hand doesn't work.
Nine months. They would get like a base test from my left hand that would say like they shock you. So they're manipulating the nerve to connect to open. My left hand's freaking jumping off the table. It's going crazy. And it's still 9 months later, they hook it up to my right one and they crank that thing up and it's just
so they hook it up to one arm that works.
Yeah.
And you get a sense of what it's supposed to look like, and then they and it's moving around.
Oh yeah,
what it's supposed to do.
Yep.
And then they hook it up to the next one, and it doesn't work.
So yeah, I mean my left arm's jumping off the table. They go to my right arm to hit it with this electric like shock therapy, and it just I can feel maybe like the hair on my arm standing up.
Yeah.
But I can't. My arm's not moving. You know, it's not engaging that nerve.
Nothing's happening right.
Yeah, nothing's happening right.
So what's always interesting to me in these types of situations is, you know, as human beings, we have a lot of choices in how we approach these types of things, right?
Yeah.
Some people fall apart. Some people just absolutely fall apart, fall into a deep depression. They go through, they give up. Sometimes people just, I mean, this is, you know, catastrophic. Whereas yeah. on the other end, some people will go through things like these. You know, you read about, hear about, you know, tragic things happening to people, and they're unbroken by it.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure you had your moments, and maybe I understand this wrong. We were friends at the time, and yeah. so we played poker together a fair bit up till the accident. We worked together,
mm-hmm.
so we were around each other a fair bit. And it seemed to me like for the most part you were keeping yourself together pretty well. Was that the case, or what? Or where were you at? Were you good at hiding it?
I was probably really good at hiding it. You know, I'm at that point. I'm better nowadays, but at that point, I just didn't like to share my downfalls with people. I mean, not that I didn't want someone to be there for me or nothing, but I've always just kind of had the mindset of like, well, someone's got it worse than me.
Yeah.
I mean, but I was pretty down. I was depressed. I even though I had started to accept that maybe I'm not going to be able to really use my right hand, you know, my right arm is shrunken up.
There's a moment in time where you just think
permanent.
Never be able to use this arm again.
Yeah, I mean, after 9 months,
24 years old.
Oh yeah, yeah. My doctors are, they're like, man, I could get the gist of them. I wasn't an expert at reading body language, but you know, at the month mark, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, they're like, you feel anything? Nope. Like they're like, you know, nervous. It should be regenerating more at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just thinking, man, my doctor doesn't look very confident. Like. Okay.
So he's letting you down slowly.
Slowly, yeah. Just like. Kind of like, man, well, all right, you know. So, yeah, I mean, my arm at this point, you know, 9 to 12 months after the fact, somewhere in there, like it's half the size from like my elbow down. It's really weird, you know. I was wearing long sleeve shirts, you know. I was so conscious of it. Like,
yeah,
I just accepted it, you know.
Well, I remember playing poker with you. At the time we had a monthly home game.
Right.
And,
oh yeah.
And you know, everybody passed the cards around and at one of the times that you came to play, you couldn't shuffle the deck.
Yeah. Oh, you say that and I go back straight to that day. I remember that. I remember sitting around the table. There was quite a few of us and, I believe I had someone shuffle for me.
Yeah, somebody else.
I'm out there the best I could.
Yep,
you know?
Yep, yep. Yeah, so that's crazy. But you know what? One of the things that really struck me as you were going through that was how hard you worked at this.
Yeah.
Like, you never gave up. You never stuck. Like, the doctor said, you know, hey, you may not have used to with this arm. And
right.
You're thinking this might, but you didn't take that, right?
No, yeah, the way my brain works is almost, I wouldn't say like more logical. Like I have to have a processes of like understanding what I'm going through. So I'm like, okay, I accept this as it is, you know, what is, not that it wouldn't come back, you know, I was still working hard, you know, as far as therapy and all that stuff. But like I wasn't going to wait around forever for it to come back.
Yeah.
I was going to move on, and do what I could. So.
Move on, do what you could. I mean, that's a position of power. Instead of feeling sorry for yourself, instead of, you know, you go through those things, no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. I mean, if I lost the use of my arm, I'm going to have some moments. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you know, it just is. And you know, if there's nothing you can do about it, then what it seemed to me like was that you really just held on to what you were in control of. And
yeah,
and you had talked about a lot of, and I remember. So there was a day you came over, we did played our monthly poker game. You could not shuffle. And I remember you talking at that time about every day you were looking at your hand, trying to will it to move.
Yeah.
And I remember you saying something like, it's going to work. I'm going to have my use. And I remember feeling really sorry for you, like that you were, I felt like you were in total denial.
Yeah.
On it. Cause it, oh, from yeah. where I sit, your arm, you had your arm in a sling.
Yeah.
Maybe I got this wrong, but you also talked about maybe they thought maybe amputating your arm was a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, there was things thrown around to where, it was just mind boggling. Yeah. I don't know. Like you said, maybe at that point I was in denial, but I don't know. I was headstrong for it, but, yeah, no, they had mentioned that might, had been something I'd have to go through. I remember just sitting here talking to you about it. It's like everything that I wouldn't say everything I was known for, you know, I was hopefully a good guy and everything, but like when it came to sports, like whether it's throwing darts, bowling, pitching, throwing a football, you know, I could do it all, you know, it was my right hand.
Yeah.
You know, as much as I tried to with my left hand, I didn't know who I was going to be, you know, for a little bit going back and forth, but yeah.
So this is your identity was taken from you.
Yeah. I'm probably stuck in the midst of figuring out what am I going to do now? Who am I? What's the next road look like for me?
Yeah. Yeah. That's wild. And you were working. So I basically gave up on your arm.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know the whole story. I just remember thinking like, yeah, man, it's been a while. If the thing ain't working now, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, but I remember you saying you were just going to keep working on it, and
yeah,
you worked at it. Was it daily? Is that what it was?
Pretty much every day. I mean, like, kind of like you said a few minutes ago, there's something about looking at part of your body and wanting it to move and it not was like, I was really OCD with. I'm like, just start to move,
do something.
Little thing. Like, come on, like, make some movement here. Like, it filled a lot of my time.
Yeah.
So it was like my life's mission, you know,
to make it happen.
just move.
So you never gave up hope that it would that it would work again, right?
Yeah. No, never gave up on it.
So then what, you know, it's not working and we're at what, how long? It was a year later?
Yeah, about a year later, you know.
And something interesting happened.
Yeah, I mean, I remember it. To this point in my life, it was probably the most grateful day of my life.
And
a day that I'll never forget. I was entering the bathroom. I was going to take a shower. It was after dinner. I got in the shower, I reached up with my left hand, pulled the curtain over, you know, the daily thing. I used my left hand, I got in the shower, reached back, I closed the curtain. Like I said, I was using my left hand for most things at this point. But,
yeah,
you know, instinctively, I go to reach up with my right arm, and, well, I guess I knocked the soap down to myself. And right then in that moment, I felt, I mean, it was the smallest, most minute feeling, this little twitch, like the top of my forearm, I think my pointer finger, like the smallest, I haven't felt that in a year. It was something.
So 12 months has gone by. You can't make this thing move no matter what you try.
Right.
You're in the shower.
Yeah.
Sort of accidentally.
Yeah.
You feel this twitch.
I feel a twitch.
So what's that feel like?
Oh man. Like I was to say like excited or like, just like naturally euphoric on life, like everything in that moment had changed.
Wow.
I knew.
So going back to the O2 count when
yeah.
you lost,
yeah,
when you lost everything,
yeah, everything came back.
Is this feeling similar to that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
oh yeah. It was like, because for 9-12 months, my doctor's like, yeah, you'll feel it here. You know, this is kind of where the radial nerve is connected. This is where you'll feel the smallest minute. Like tingle.
So the doc educated you enough that when this happened, you knew it was a bigger deal.
Yeah,
I knew
in that moment.
Okay,
it was a big deal, man. I was, man, did I cry? I like that movement. That moment, I knew I was probably going to get my hand function back. You know, a matter of time.
Wow.
You know, I was.
I probably would have fell to the ground. I mean, that's incredible.
besides the birth of my first daughter, like, man, that was it.
Yeah.
That sign, like, I was so motivated in life that nothing was going to stop me. You know, all that hard work, physical therapy, even though it didn't seem like it for the longest time. I mean, I worked at it, you know, and slowly but surely, I mean, weeks, months later, I kept it up, and it inch by inch, you know, every few months, I could slowly start to move my hand, like another finger started to twitch.
Wow.
You know, 4 or 5 more months, I could actually
and
open
what's this,
my hand up.
What's this like as this is happening? Like how, I mean, you know, you have a twitch. How long was it between the first twitch and the second twitch?
I would say probably a week.
Okay. So
I could not get it to do it again to save my life. Right after that first moment, I'm like, am I crazy? Am I crazy? Did that just happen? But like, it wouldn't do it for like a week.
So
but
for then, 7 days, yeah. You had a twitch. Yeah. Your arm wasn't working before. You had a twitch for 7 days. You're thinking, well, maybe it didn't twitch.
Yeah, but I was starting to doubt myself, and but then it did it again, you know.
Wow.
And then it did it again. So then it was like after a few days, it started to speed up pretty good. So like after a few days, after the second twitch, like it would do it on command. Now I could kind of like do like a flex, you know, like just a small little flex and make my like forearm muscle move, just slightly. But
so how much time is this? So from,
probably a month.
So from twitch number one to being able to make a muscle,
yeah,
like a fist or whatever, is about a month.
Yeah, it took about a month just for me to be able to like flex the tendon on the top of my forearm.
What was every day like as you're going through this process? Were you excited to see what growth would come? Were you frustrated? Were you like, what was every day like?
From having to put up like the last year of nothing, like I was happy with anything. So I mean, I was just, I really didn't have much expectations or like, hey, I need to be here by this time or whatnot. But I could tell it was getting better. You know, it was very slow, and nerves, you know, they move slow when they're healing, but it was coming back.
Wow. So it's coming back. So you 1 year without the use of the arm, and it starts to come back. Where did you land?
Yeah. So I would say from the twitch to where it was like fully back, and full strength was probably about like 7 to 8 months.
Wow.
So after the first couple months, it took a lot to get it to move, but then once it was really activating, I mean, it probably took three or four months for me to be able to completely open my hand. And then it was kind of strength training, feeling that.
So right now your arm works 100%.
Yeah, 100%. I can't throw like 90 Easy. Miles an hour, but like it's 100%. There's no defect. I mean, it was.
And you have a rod in your arm?
I
now?
Do.
Is so, that what the deal is?
Yeah, there's like a.
How's that at the airport? Is that a.
That thing goes off every time. No, funny enough, it hasn't ever gone off, but maybe at like a golf tournament one time. I don't know why I was going to watch a professional golf tournament and that went off. You know, they check your luggage for weird stuff, but or belongings. But yeah, no, there's a 10 to 12 inch plate in there and like 15 screws. And I remember, I mean, I still have like a picture of the x-ray of it. I mean, it's pretty gnarly looking in there. Still in there to this day.
So you're okay. So you got a year no use, first twitch, and then you're about 8 months until you're back to 100%, right?
Right. Yep.
You know, and like I talked about before, one of the things as I, you know, I was in and out of your life at this time or in and out of contact with you at this time, or I shouldn't say in and out of, I had limited contact because you were at home and I was working, and when we didn't cross paths as much as we did when we were together, but
yeah.
But what struck me was your persistence. So you said you had some dark times. You said you're going through, you know, what anybody would go through, you know, with that type of thing.
Yeah.
But I just have to say, like, from the outside looking, you know, from the outside looking towards you, I just was really impressed with that you just continued to push.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
You never threw in the towel.
Yeah. No, that's really the only way I know, you know. I mean, it's not eliminating the sadness and grief and everything else. All that is there, the sorrow. But I've only kind of always known
you pushed,
to keep going.
You pushed on. In fact, we're going to do two episodes, right? So to kind of recap on this, you know, Justin wants to be a professional pitcher. He wants to play in the major leagues. You know, he's working really hard towards that. He's got a lifetime of love of the game of baseball. And, you know, in a moment, all of that changed in a way that nobody is ever gonna consider. You know, nobody ever is going to think, you know, my life is going to change in a moment because my arm breaks in half. Like, it's just so such a wild story, right?
Yeah.
But you pushed anyway. And, you know, I want to have you back for another episode because I want to talk about there's some other very significant things that happened. Once you healed, you went on to start your own business and had some really cool ups and downs and some other like big giant things. So you know, we'll have you back for episode 21 so that we can, you know, cover some of that cool stuff too. So hey, I want to say thanks for listening to Alger Podcasts. You can get more information in future podcasts at algercoaching.com. That's ALGER, algercoaching.com.